Man, 2020 has been the craziest year in the world, and if you aren't thinking about getting yourself prepared, then you need to have your head examined. Go check out My Patriot Supply. We've done a deal with them. We've got our own website. We'll get you a discount for it. You go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com, and right now they're running a discount on 4-week supply. People that sign up through our website get $100 off of these orders. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to your family. If you've watched the first half of 2020 unfold the way it is, and you're not thinking about getting prepared, then I don't know what to tell you. I mean, listen, they've got emergency survival food, long-term, short-term, bulk meat and protein kits. They've got all kinds of stuff, survival items, cooking gear, power and lighting, water filtration systems. I mean, it used to be that you would buy these sorts of things in case there might be an emergency like a earthquake or a flood or something like that. Now, every single day seems like a bigger emergency than the one before. Go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. Take a look at what they have to offer you. See if it's a fit for you. Get yourself prepared. Do yourself this favor right now while you still have time. Don't be idiotic about this. It's coming. It's coming, people. You got to be prepared. So check out My Patriot Supply and go through our website, preparewithmacroaggressions.com.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gutapi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I am your host, Charlie Robinson. How are you doing, everybody? If you want to connect with the show, go to the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can find information there about my first book. You can connect with the show via email that way. You can buy the book in the digital format there as well through PayPal. And if you're interested in the paperback copy version, that's available at barnesandnoble.com and also at Amazon. And, you know, when you write a book about control structures, one of the things that you inevitably come up against is the use of sexual blackmail as a form of control in politics. And it's not a new concept, but what is new about it is that finally, it has been brought into the public discussion through the arrest and subsequent murder, yes, murder, of Jeffrey Epstein. Now, for the bulk of the people living in the United States, this was the first time they had actually heard about the idea of running blackmail rings as a form of control to sexual blackmail rings, I should say, as a form of control. But it's not, this is not something reserved simply for Jeffrey Epstein and these guys. It's not even an American concept. It's been around for a very long time. And like many things, like false flag attacks and sexual blackmail, they exist because they work. And they have a way of getting people to do what they want them to do. Now, in the past, it used to be like, if you talk about, when I say the past, I mean like the 50s or so, when J. Edgar Hoover was the head of the FBI, and he was compiling compromise folders on all of these political, not even necessarily adversaries, also sometimes political allies too. You want to get as much information on each person as you can, so that that information can be used a variety of ways. It could keep somebody on track. It can put somebody who's off track back on track by threatening to go public with it. It can be used to extort them for money. It could be used to extort them into keeping their mouth shut on something. It can be used to force them to say things in public that they wouldn't want to say. You can force people to vote your way on a specific topic that comes up for vote in Congress. This happens all the time. So it's powerful. You know, if you think about it, running for president, becoming the nominee, and then winning the presidency takes a lot of effort, costs a whole lot of money, and you have to be, there has to be a perfect storm of things have to happen for someone to wind up falling into this situation and then just getting swept like on a very strong current from obscurity straight into the White House. It happens, but it requires a lot of effort, luck, timing, money, power, favors, all those things. But if you want to, what you really wanted to do as president is be in a position where you get to make these decisions. Well, it's easier actually to get the dirt on the guy that is either going to become president or is currently president, because then you are the president. You know what I mean? If I've got the goods on Trump, maybe a bad example because Trump, you can't shame somebody who has no shame. But let's just say, let's just use Bill Clinton as an example. When he was in office, he was being blackmailed by the Israelis. They had rewired the phone systems that were in the White House. They had configured it in a way that they were getting, they had the lines split off, and one was going to Israel, not directly to Israel, but it was going to someplace locally, and then it was being handed over to Israel. And Clinton was blackmailed constantly to do things that he maybe didn't want to do. Maybe he did want to do it. I mean, Bill Clinton was such a reprehensible scumbag and such a somebody devoid of any sort of soul and ethics that they probably didn't have to work too hard to blackmail him. But the fact is, they did. And they had all of his phone sex conversations with Monica Lewinsky and everything. It wasn't a one-time thing. Netanyahu used that pretty heavily to leverage Clinton into doing some things that he probably didn't want to do. But what is easier? Running for president, getting lucky and doing all the things that you need to do to become the president? Or is it easier to find out dirt on the president than use it as leverage over him to make the president do the things you want to do while staying safely behind in the shadows? I would say that it's much easier to do it that way. Having control of the president is like being the president yourself, depending on the level of compromise. Now, in the 50s, it used to be that you'd get the dirt on somebody that was cheating on their wife, right? And that was a big deal. And you're like, I'm going to expose you if you don't vote our way this, you know, in this upcoming vote. Then it became, well, this person is a closeted homosexual and you've got the goods on them and they, and to a certain extent, that still kind of works. I think there's a lot of closeted homosexuals in Congress that prefer to not, you know, have people know that they're gay. I don't think it matters anymore, but for whatever reason, it seems to matter to them. So somebody like Lindsey Graham is obviously a homosexual, and there's not anything wrong with that, but it's just that that's what he is. And a lot of people know that and probably have the goods on him. But at some point that doesn't really work very, very much, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, homosexuality is fairly open, you know, it's out in front of you. There's, you know, the stigma that used to be attached to it has largely gone away in most places, maybe not everywhere, of course, but the new compromise situation is pedophilia, and it is extremely effective because there's no expiration date on that. You know, you can be married, cheating on your wife and get, you know, get blackmailed for that, but you can just get a divorce and then the blackmail has no power over you. Or you could be a closeted homosexual and someone's blackmailing you with, oh, I'm going to expose your secret. Well, then you come out of the closet and then that takes away the power. But if you're a pedophile, there's no expiration date. You don't get to just get out in front of that and be like, yeah, 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 listen, I'm a pedophile, it's fine. And then, no, no, that's not okay. Now, there's a push in Congress to normalize and legalize many perversions. It's not my word, perversions. It's the word that Tom DeLay used to describe it, including pedophilia and bestiality. Now, when Tom DeLay first said that, a lot of people just said, get out of here. You don't, that's crazy, man. You sound unhinged. But what you've seen lately is there is most definitely, not so much on the bestiality component, but pedophilia, very big push for it. There has, to try and normalize it. I think one thing that people that are new to this information may come to discover, I think a lot of people will know it already, but those new to this will discover that Washington, D.C. has a pedophilia problem, much like Hollywood. It is everywhere. And the thing about it is that everything that happens in Washington, D.C. in terms of the promotion of people up the ladder, the recruitment of people into the Washington, D.C. politics machine, it's all pretty much the exact opposite of how you would hope or expect it to be. We're used to dealing with, say, the corporate world, where let's say there's five candidates applying for a job. The recruiter looks at all five of them and picks the best person. Maybe it's the person that's got, you know, went to the best school or has the most work experience or has glowing recommendations or something, whatever. They're going to look for the best person. They're going to pick that person. They're going to give them the job and welcome them into their organization with the understanding that we've brought you in because you're a very good person, you're good at your job, and we need you to be good at your job for our organization. That's how all of us view these things. Washington, D.C. is the exact opposite of that. In Washington, D.C., when they lay out the five resumes, what they're looking for is the most fucked up candidate, the one that is just barely human. And I would say in Washington, D.C., there's a lot of people hanging on there that are just barely human. So guys that have major skeletons in their closet, in normal world, in the real world, those would be seen as detrimental components of your potential employment. In Washington, D.C., they see that as a benefit, as a good thing. Ah, this guy's a tremendous alcoholic, degenerate gambler, scumbag. Perfect. That's the guy we want. Because as long as he's compromised like that, then we can get him to do a lot of things. We'll tell him what to do, and he's already sort of off the beaten path. He's already a bit of a degenerate. So we'll tell him what to do. And maybe he has no soul or no, you know, he'll do whatever you want him to do. But in the event that he refuses to do what you want him to do, then you know you've got some blackmail on him. You know you've got the ability to make him do some of the things that you need him to do. Let's say he's a bad alcoholic. You can arrange for that dude to get arrested on a DUI stop real easy. Oh, he's drinking in that bar? Have some nice lady go up and sit next to him. Next thing you know, they're having a couple more drinks. And they decide to leave together, and the cops pull this guy over, and now he's got a DUI. So they have, or, you know, if you're in Congress and you're, you know, closeted homosexual, maybe they'll find a way to pull you up, have you go to an after party, get you on camera, unbeknownst to you, engaging in some sort of sexual activity with another man, and then boom, they've got you, you know, they've got the pictures or the video or both. So this is how Washington, D.C. runs. So Jeffrey Epstein is the topic of this episode. And what Jeffrey Epstein did was not unlike what a lot of people in Hollywood and Washington, D.C. have been doing for a long, long time. Using sexual blackmail to compromise people and put them in situations where they become beholden to the person. Now, the Jeffrey Epstein case is so deep and so far-reaching that one episode won't do it justice. There's so many layers to it. But at its core, what was happening with Epstein was that he was running a sexual blackmail entrapment ring using underage girls in the guise of giving massages. He was having powerful people come to his island or his Manhattan townhome or his ranch in New Mexico or his place in Palm Beach and put themselves in situations where they were you know, getting a massage from a 14-year-old girl, which turned into a hand job, and it's all on video, or worse, you know. So you've got a compromise organization. Now, the question is that, so all that is not up for debate. That's what he was doing. That's part of what he was doing. He was doing a lot of things, but that's part of what he was doing. That's the main crux of it. The question is, who is he working for? That has been a question that a lot of people want answered. So was he Mossad? Was he CIA? Was he working for, you know, other spy agencies? Well, he was definitely working for the CIA, for sure. That is not debatable. That was something that he was involved in back in the 80s, actually. He was running... he was helping to launder money for the CIA back in the mid-80s, having to do with the Iran-Contra affair. So he was brought into that. Then he was also involved with a guy named Stephen Hoffenberg. Stephen Hoffenberg went to prison for 20 years for running a gigantic $450 million Ponzi scheme. And his right-hand man in that whole operation was Jeffrey Epstein. Now, Epstein didn't go to prison for that. In fact, Hoffenberg has said that Epstein, you know, the money that Epstein had, a lot of it came from that Ponzi scheme, and that Epstein knew exactly what he was doing and that he was involved in it 100%. He described his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein as we were around each other 24/7 for 2 years or several years, I think he said. So Epstein was involved in these things, yet he just kept finding a way to not get in trouble. He didn't get in trouble with money laundering for the CIA in the 80s. He didn't get in trouble with the Hoffenberg Ponzi scheme. He didn't get in trouble, not in a real way, when he was busted in Palm Beach back in 2009. He didn't get in trouble. He finally was arrested in 2019, getting off a plane in Teterboro and taken to jail where he was held. And then later he died under, I think, you know, to call it suspicious circumstances is the understatement of the year, right? But that's where his story ended. More than likely, there's questions about that, of course. But so, what was he doing? No, was he working for the Mossad as well? Yes, he was. He was most definitely working for both spy agencies. He was running his operation through. What I said was New York, Palm Beach, the island, and New Mexico, but he also had a place in Paris as well. And so his relationship there is through a guy named Jean-Luc Brunel, who owned a modeling agency. And one thing that I think people don't really understand too much is that a lot of these modeling agencies are literally front groups for human trafficking, for moving people around from one place to the other from countries to countries on certain model visas and things like that. It happens. It's a real thing. And it's a scary thing. And Jean-Luc Brunel, who ran this talent agent, this modeling agency in Paris, is, you know, knee deep in these activities. He was a procurer of children from Eastern European countries. And, there's just so much that Epstein was involved in. He's got a bit of a Bernie Madoff feel to him. You know, his cover story, which was a flimsy one, was that he was running a hedge fund, Jay Epstein and Co. But much like Madoff, nobody ever did any deals with him. They never had any sort of, they never did transactions. And that's kind of a red flag, because in Madoff's case, when you're managing $50 billion, you have at least some interaction with those other people on Wall Street. And nobody was dealing with him. Nobody was trading with him. And they had the same story and the same feeling about Jeffrey Epstein, that he was a creation. And that's what you would do if you were working for the intelligence agencies. They would set up a backstory about who you are and what you do, front you with money, and let you, you know, give the appearance that you're doing one thing when in actuality you're doing something clearly much different. So the hedge fund component has always just seemed like a, you know, just a cover story. He talks about being a currency trader at some point. Well, I don't know. Maybe he was, but he wasn't doing, this wasn't enough of a component of his operation that it even matters, really. What he was doing for sure, who Jeffrey Epstein was he was a sex offender. He was a compulsive sex addict, and he was constantly rotating through, you know, three girls a day at his Palm Beach mansion, getting massages in air quotes, which is code for, you know, everything else. He did this for years with the help of Ghislaine Maxwell. Now, people have described her as being like a pimp, like she's pimping these girls out. And that's soft peddling this. Who Ghislaine Maxwell is a rapist and a human trafficker. She's not a pimp. She's not a madam. She's not arranging dates for wealthy guys. She's trafficking children. She's a reprehensible scumbag who deserves the death penalty for what she's been doing for all these years. And when you dig into Ghislaine Maxwell's past and who her father is and who her sisters are, you discover a very disturbing backstory to her. Now, her father was Robert Maxwell. Robert Maxwell was Rupert Murdoch before Rupert Murdoch was Rupert Murdoch, if you know what I mean. He was the media magnate in the UK. He's of Czechoslovakian descent. They nicknamed him the Bouncing Czech because he would write payroll checks that would bounce all the time. He was always, he's one of those guys that was juggling, you know, constant. One of those rich guys that was always kind of half broke, you know, juggling money and moving money from here to pay this guy and moving money from there to pay that guy. Got to the point where he looted the pension funds of the newspapers and magazines that he owned. He just stole all their money. Now, he was a spy for Israel as well. He was also a spy for the Soviet Union, which is a little known fact, and MI6 for the UK or for Britain. So he was a triple agent, and he almost got himself killed by the Russians because he was running blackmail operations for the Russians at an early point, and damn near got hung for treason. When that was discovered, what he was doing. So he had double crossed people plenty of times. He had eventually, you know, he had needed money. And so he was telling the Mossad that he needed this money or else he was going to blow the whistle on what they were doing, which is the absolute last thing you would do to the Mossad. They don't fuck around. Okay. They are not to be messed with. That is a dangerous organization filled with some people that are very good at their job. And unfortunately, being good at their job means they're very good at killing people and making it look like someone else did it. So these are the wrong guys to fuck with. And of course, he knew that. But being this larger-than-life, arrogant character, probably thought he could just, you know, make it happen. You know, just he'd be above it all. Well, he's on his boat, his yacht, the Lady Ghislaine, in 1991 off the Canary Islands, and they found him floating next to the boat, you know, just out there floating dead. Obviously, he was killed, thrown off there, poisoned, probably by the Mossad, who knows. So Ghislaine Maxwell, Epstein's right-hand woman, comes from a family that is as shady as they get, as well-connected as you can possibly be. She literally grew up friends with Prince Andrew and the royal family and Charles and all of these people. This was her peer group. She knew these people very well. She was a part of that system. And that system is very dark and disturbing. There's a lot of pedophilia. There's a lot of ritual child abuse that happens there. There's a satanic component to it. There's a lot of symbolism. There's those crazy Rothschild parties. If you've ever seen the pictures from like 1975, I think, of them wearing all these nutty outfits and going out, you know, Eyes Wide Shut, that Eyes Wide Shut party. You know, that scene where everybody's got the masks, that was filmed in the Rothschild mansion. So that's like, you know, more than likely got Stanley Kubrick killed, what he put in that movie that was edited out, the 20 something minutes of it that was taken out. So this is that world. This is the royal family. These are the Maxwells. This is all these people. They work in that circle. When Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell got together, they both brought something interesting to the table. Ghislaine Maxwell brought all of her connections and deep, industry connections, right, into the royal family and high-ranking positions of politics. Jeffrey Epstein brought a psychopathic behavior, a propensity for child rape, and a ambition to become something much bigger than he really was. And the two of them working together were like a match made in hell. They really complemented one another. They dated for a while. They brought other girls into the equation. And there's numerous reports of Ghislaine Maxwell raping women there. She's not a good person. She's not an innocent bystander in this, and she's not a madam. And I think we need to address these people for what they really are and who they actually are. Not, you know, Jeffrey Epstein, this rich old man that liked to get massages from young girls. No. Don't discount that. Don't sugarcoat this. He's a child rapist. He's a human trafficker. He's a pedophile. That's what they are. They're not, this isn't some dirty old man like Benny Hill style, you know, like tapping a little girl on her butt and like giving a funny little smile. This was rape. This was, if you tell anyone, we will murder you. This is hardcore. This was pimping them out to other people and having it captured on video. Some brave girls that have come out and talked about their experience with this. Virginia Giuffre, she's one of them. Give her a ton of credit for talking about this stuff. She knows what happens when you talk about it. You run the risk of winding up dead. So this is, I want people to be clear about, you know, about what this, what was really happening. And it brings up to me a quote from a guy named Jeffrey Nyquist who said, pedophilia, if you look at it, is an important tool for corrupting, controlling, and manipulating a foreign government and sabotaging its political process, even sowing confusion. This whole thing can be used in all kinds of creative ways to hurt the target country. So we've all heard the stories about Bill Clinton's connections to Jeffrey Epstein and flying on the Lolita Express 26 times. Well, if you look at the picture, there's a picture of Chelsea's wedding, Chelsea Clinton, Chelsea Hubble, right? Her wedding, and you can see Ghislaine Maxwell there, you know, looking down the aisle as Chelsea's coming down the aisle. You can see Ghislaine sitting right there on the aisle. They're friends, okay? This network of people that, you know, seem a little disjointed, these guys are all friends. Bill Clinton and Jeffrey Epstein were friends. Bill Gates and Jeffrey Epstein were friends. Ehud Barak and Jeffrey Epstein were very good friends. Okay. You can say what you want about Epstein. He's a reprehensible scumbag, but he was well-connected. But he wasn't just working on blackmailing people. That was his specialty for sure. But he was also doing other things that are a little bit more, I don't know, not so out in the obvious and also not crystal clear as to his intentions. But he was funding artificial intelligence programs pretty heavily, actually. Do you remember Sophia, the robot in Saudi Arabia that was granted citizenship? She's a bald-headed robot where the back of her head was kind of open a little bit with, like, you could see kind of the circuitry. It wasn't really meant to look totally human, but it had a very human look to it, but clearly sort of in the android sense. Well, this AI robot that was granted citizenship in Saudi Arabia, it was part of like a PR ploy, really. They weren't really, you know, going to give this robot citizenship, a female robot, Saudi Arabia. Man, women weren't even allowed to drive until just recently. They treat their women like shit. Why would they treat this robot any better? But anyway, it was part of this creation by a group called Hanson Robotics, which is David Hanson and Ben Goertzel. Now, these are names that probably don't ring a bell for many people, but Ben Goertzel's name keeps popping up over and over again. He was given money to create what was deemed to be emotional software for VR applications, virtual reality applications. So his job was to create emotional software. And so he was working with Hanson Robotics to create this Sophia doll. But you can always, you know, you can't really sell these Sophia dolls, these big one, you know, Sophia robots, because they're, you know, 5.5 feet tall. They probably cost millions of dollars. But what they wanted to do was they wanted to capitalize and make a little Sophia doll. And that would be the first AI doll for girls ages 8 and up. So Ben Goertzel was given $6.5 million to set about to create a smaller version of the Sophia doll. And who did he get that money from? He got it from Jeffrey Epstein. So Jeffrey Epstein gave this scientist $6.5 million to start working on a robot doll for little girls for emotional software that was going to be wired up with cameras, microphones, geo-tracking, and a variety of other things. Think about the applications for that in the hands of somebody like Jeffrey Epstein. If you've got a little doll like that, it's just recording everything, and you give it to some girl, and it's in her room, and it becomes her favorite toy, and she's talking to it, and it sees what's going on in the bedroom. It sees if this girl is living in an abusive family where the dad comes in and beats her all the time or sexually assaults her or whatever. You get to hear this girl's thoughts as she talks to the doll. You get to hear her, what sort of playtime she devises for the doll. Oh, we're going to have a tea party. We're going to do this. Or we're going to, you know, let's go make this fort so that we can hide so that daddy won't hit us anymore. You know, whatever. You know, just you can think of all the horrible things that could possibly be piped back into the main office from this doll. Not to mention, it's a virtual catalog for pedophiles. Oh, you want a little blonde girl that's 10 years old and comes from a broken home? Well, why don't you go search through, you know, we've got 100 of them right here for you sick degenerates to choose from. This is where she is. This is where she lives. This is where you can, this is the GPS coordinates to her house. Boom, go pick her up and boom, she vanishes, kidnapped, never to be seen again. Now, if Hasbro comes up with this AI doll, I'm less suspicious. I think of it as, you know, well, this is just the next generation of dolls. This is where it's going. Everything gets more advanced. Things get interesting. They start wiring these dolls with, you know, features that we find on our Ring doorbells or our cell phones or whatever. And I would maybe be willing to accept that this is just the transformation and the natural evolution of toys. But when it's Jeffrey Epstein doing it, I'm less comfortable with that. So it's something that, you know, we have to take into account, because Epstein wasn't just financing guys like Ben Goetzel. He donated tons of money to Stephen Hawking, to Marvin Minsky, and other elite scientists. He was spreading this money around. So it makes you ask the question, you know, what was the point? What's he doing in there? What is the connection? Is there a connection between pedophilia and artificial intelligence? I think there is. I think there is some component of that that works together. Hanson Robotics has ties to Ray Kurzweil, who's I don't know what his official title is at Google, chief scientist or something, futurist. He's one of these guys pushing for an AI takeover. And Hanson Robotics is working with him, working with Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel's an interesting guy. There's a lot of overlap between Peter Thiel and some of the things that Epstein was involved in. So I think most people know Peter Thiel is the guy that gave Zuckerberg, invested $500,000 in Facebook in exchange for 10% stake in the company. A hell of a deal for Peter Thiel, by the way. He also was a co-founder of PayPal, and he was a founder of a new company called Palantir. Well, not new, but it's been around for maybe a decade now. And Palantir is a data mining company that was funded by InQtel, which is the venture capital arm of the CIA. And it is created, this company was created specifically to work with the Department of Defense. I mean, they do some sort of non-defense related contracting now, but early on that was their focus. Now, Peter Thiel's on the advisory board of the Machine Intelligence Research Institute, whose director of research was Ben Goetzel. So there's some connections there. Also, one of the things Peter Thiel's involved, and I'm not trying to say that Peter Thiel is a pedophile or anything like that, because I've never heard that, but he is also involved in a company called Ambrosia, which takes children's blood and uses it and sells it to rich people for regenerative purposes. Okay. And now that has me extremely concerned. Because now you're talking about the same type of stuff that you start hearing with these secret societies, with adrenochrome and shit like that. And anytime you're dealing with children's blood, you are operating in a very, very gray area, in a weird place. And a place where you start to get involved in pedophilia and satanic ritual abuse and things like that. And now we know that happens at the highest levels of government. It also happens at the highest levels of big business, and it is rampant in Hollywood. And Peter Thiel has connections to all of these. So something to be, you know, something to take into consideration. I see that these worlds of Ben Goertzel and Jeffrey Epstein and Peter Thiel have, they overlap quite a bit. So Marvin Minsky was one of the scientists involved in this. He's an MIT scientist that created artificial intelligence. Then you've got Epstein funding this foundation called OpenCog, along with the Hong Kong government and Hong Kong Polytechnic University doing emotional software for the gaming industry. This is back in 2013, developing cognitive emotional software and AI research. So here we go again with emotional software. And then one of the guys that Epstein funded to the tune of $30 million is a Harvard professor of math. Epstein gave him $30 million to start Program for Evolutionary Dynamics. And what this group does at Harvard is they study population structure, evolutionary economics, and evolutionary game theory. So what does that mean? Well, what they're doing is they're involved in running simulations to see how things react when new variables are introduced into the equation. So what happens to a population when the coronavirus is introduced into it? And they'll run these AI-related population structures and use game theory to see how things play out when you start to change society. And I would say that Program for Evolutionary Dynamics is a code word for eugenics. And eugenics is the concept of thinning out the herd, improving the stock. This is what all these globalist maniacs get into once they have more money than they know what to do with. They start to take on this God complex, or they think that everybody else is just occupying space on their planet. They want to get rid of them because they're so smart and they're so good at what they do, and everyone else is so stupid that we're just going to get rid of them. So they start to put into place these eugenics programs, and they call them fancy things. But at their core, they're population reduction vehicles. They're talking about ways in which to cull the herd. They see us as part of that plan. Now, I'm sure that Bill Gates and Jeffrey Epstein had a ton to talk about, because Bill Gates is all up in this eugenics movement. His dad was the head of Planned Parenthood. Bill Gates is a certified maniac, a reprehensible scumbag with his vaccine agenda and everything that he's, you know, the simulations that he's running, you know, the simulating the coronavirus outbreak. This is what you get when you start talking about things like Programs for Evolutionary Dynamics. You wind up in this world of game theory based on what happens to the population when we do X, Y, and Z to it. So beyond just talking about population reduction and culling the herd, one of the things that these people like to do is get involved in software programs that help them to spy on other countries. And going back to the Maxwell family, Robert Maxwell, one of the things that he was involved in, and I called him a Mossad agent, you know, that he was a spy for Israel. And that's not even close to just some sort of assumption. They literally wrote a book about him called The Assassination of Robert Maxwell, Israel's Super Spy. You know, so it's there. You know, they're not trying to hide that. That's what he was doing. And part of what he was doing when he was working for the Mossad was he was involved in stealing the Promise spy software. And that was software program made by a company called InsLaw in the United States. And it was designed for different purposes. They wound up stealing it. The Israelis stole the software, built a backdoor into it, and then sold that software to other countries, obviously not telling them that there was a backdoor in it. And what it did was any country that installed this software, the Israelis had a backdoor so they could see everything that was going on inside that country when it was used to manage, like, originally the intention was to manage like legal scheduling of court cases and things like that. And it became this software system that was, that was instrumental for a lot of these countries in running parts of their government. And so the Israelis had the inside track. It was a huge win for Israel. It was a colossal disaster for everybody else. So you've got Robert Maxwell involved in that, and the rotten apple didn't fall far from the perverted tree in the Maxwell family, because Ghislaine Maxwell's sister, Christine Maxwell, wound up starting a data mining company, right, called Chiliad, a company that works with the FBI's counterterrorism data warehouse. Now, how or why the FBI would trust their counterterrorism data to a company that was started by the daughter of one of the biggest spies in the world, Robert Maxwell, who made his bones installing spy software that was stolen by a government, by the government of Israel, and injected all over the world. Why would the FBI choose her to be the company that they use to house their terrorism data? It's just, it's idiotic. Although I don't think it's accidental. I think that someone made the decision and they wanted that information compromised. But it doesn't, I don't know that to be a fact. I just assumed that nobody could be that reckless. I mean, if I know it and I'm just some idiot writing books about stuff like this, then surely the FBI's counterterrorism data warehouse is going, yeah, the lady who's running the company that is making our software, her dad was the guy that made the other software that was really spy software. Maybe don't use her. I don't know. So, but there's more. There's more to, Christine Maxwell is married to a guy named Roger Molina. And Roger Molina worked at NASA, but his dad was a guy named Frank Molina. Now, Frank Molina started JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which is like a hybrid. It's like an offshoot of NASA. And he started JPL with Jack Parsons, L. Ron Hubbard, and they were very good friends with Aleister Crowley. So you've got a satanic component, Scientology component, occult component, and NASA all blended into one from some guy who has a son who later marries into the Maxwell family. Everything about that is shady, but it gets even worse because Christine Maxwell, her other sister, Ghislaine and Christine Maxwell's other sister, Isabel Maxwell, she works for the World Economic Forum in the technology department. Who was involved in Event 201 with the Gates Foundation running simulation of the coronavirus outbreak before it actually happened? Oh, yeah. The World Economic Forum was, just so you know. And she's the director of the, she's the director, was the director of Israel Venture Networks. Okay. So she's a venture capitalist and she's involved in this technology. And what the part of what the World Economic Forum's technology division is doing is they're focused on the fourth industrial revolution. And what does that mean? It sounds fancy and it sounds kind of cool. They're involved in brain implants, artificial intelligence, and mind control. So think about this now. Let's try and put some of these pieces together. It's not going to be the full piece of the puzzle, or the full puzzle, but it's going to be pieces of it. Jeffrey Epstein is working and investing in artificial intelligence he's creating software. He's hiring guys to create software for emotional support, emotional software for young kids. He's brought in some of the best minds in artificial intelligence and robotics to make this happen. He's married, or he's not married, but he's right-hand man of Ghislaine Maxwell, whose dad was in charge of stealing and reselling spy software to crack, you know, to be in implemented through governments around the world, so that they can take the information through these secret back doors and pull that information out and use it against people. While he's simultaneously, you know, while Epstein is now funding artificial intelligence robots that are going to be piping all this information back to a central spot and doing God knows what with. And then Ghislaine Maxwell's sister is, one of them is running a data mining company that manages the FBI's counterterrorism data. And the other sister is working on brain implants and mind control with an artificial intelligence component for the World Economic Forum, the same group that's involved in this pre-crime of the coronavirus outbreak. This is the sketchiest group of people I could possibly imagine. This is like the all-star team of maniacs. And they're all just walking around. I mean, Epstein's not. As far as we know, he's not. Ghislaine Maxwell? Isabel Maxwell? Ghislaine Maxwell? Nobody's interrogating them. Nobody's asking them what the fuck they're doing with all this AI and brain implants and, you know. If we back up just a second. Remember I said that Ghislaine Maxwell was married to a guy named Roger Molina, and Roger Molina's dad was Frank Molina, who started JPL. Well, he also was involved in the United Nations. He worked for Julian Huxley. Julian Huxley was related to Aldous Huxley of Brave New World. So it's been in this family, whether it's the Molinas or the Maxwells, they're involved in some sketchy stuff. And if you know anything about NASA and JPL, and this group of people that started JPL, they're known as the Suicide Squad. These guys were building rockets back in the, you know, in Pasadena back in the 40s and 50s and putting all this stuff together. But they were also summoning the devil and like doing all kinds of crazy occult rituals with L. Ron Hubbard and Aleister Crowley. L. Ron Hubbard, the head of Scientology, was just like a science fiction writer who wrote himself a religion. He like wrote all these stories and then just turned it into a religion. Please don't sue me, Scientology. But it's a weird batch of people to be involved with. So this, I think that when people look at artificial intelligence and things like this, they're going to see it as just the next evolution in technology. But I want people to remember that there is a very dark side to this as well, that there's a lot of these pedophilia, you know, blackmail guys, not just Epstein, but there's some other people involved, very heavily involved in artificial intelligence. And I'm telling you, I don't know exactly the ins and outs of it, but there is a connection between artificial intelligence and pedophilia. I know it. There's too much overlap with these people for there not to be something there. I mean, one of the things that Ben Goertzel wanted to do is he's the chief scientist at Hanson Robotics. He's also the CEO of a company called Singularity.net. And what they want to do is they want to put AI brains on the blockchain. He's also involved in that OpenCog Foundation. That's for the AI community. Now, I might be willing to give him a little bit of a break because I know that scientists spend half their time doing science stuff and the other half their time raising money so that they can do science stuff. And so I can almost give the guy a little bit of a break because, you know, you raise money, you hope you get a bunch of money from one person so that you don't have to go constantly fundraise from smaller people. But he took this money from Jeffrey Epstein knowing damn well who Jeffrey Epstein was, because he had already been out, you know, had already done his fake 1 year sentence in Palm Beach, and he was out. This was many years after that. So you can't pretend like you didn't know who Jeffrey Epstein was. I knew who Jeffrey Epstein was, and I wasn't asking him for money. And if I know who he was, then you better believe some guy who's saying, oh, this guy wants to give me $6.5 million is going to figure out who he was. It's not hard. It's a 30-second Google search, and you will know exactly who this guy is. So the question is, why? What are they doing? What is the play here? Is it using young girls? Is it creating this emotional software to build into these AI dolls to give out to sell to girls and kids all over the world so that they can track where they are and who they've got and go abduct them? Maybe. I mean, why would you have all these features in a robot like this if you weren't planning on using it in some way? Remember that movie, The Game, when they had that clown, that creepy clown that was wired up with cameras in its eyes and everything? It was sitting over there on the corner, freaking out Michael Douglas. Epstein was also involved with a guy named George Church, who's the father of synthetic biology at Harvard. Guy was working on sequencing of genomes and neuroscience and brain mapping and stuff like that, longevity cures. What's the common thread with all these scientist guys? Transhumanism. It's about transhumanism. It's about taking us beyond organic material, organic bodies, and being merged with robots. This is what all these lunatics are into. Guys like Ray Kurzweil. This is what they're, it's a transhumanist agenda. Now, the elite see themselves as more than human already. And this can go one of two ways. This can go either they want the technology for themselves to make them godlike and above the rest of humanity, or they're going to use this technology to give to all of us and then have the ability to pipe right into our brains whatever it is they want in our heads. It's like a Black Mirror episode, if you've ever watched that show on Netflix. Almost every episode has some component of them putting a device and attaching it to their head, if you watch. And that's predictive programming. That's where these things are going. Every episode of Black Mirror is set like, not everyone, but it appears that it's all set about 10, 15 years in the future. So it's not so far out that it's unrecognizable, but it is far enough out that they're using some technologies in the show that we don't know about, that haven't been introduced to us. And people that know about the life cycle and the way these technologies are come to be know that the governmental and military versions of these technologies are 10, 20, 30 years beyond what we're currently playing with right now in the public. So you have to wonder about shows like Black Mirror, are they showing, is this predictive programming because somebody in that organization knows what's coming? I say the answer to that is probably yes, that somebody knows. Somebody, maybe not the producers, but you know, maybe somebody who's guiding them is explaining about how some of these technologies work. Or maybe they've got a consultant that has direct knowledge of it. I don't know. But one thing I do know is that the first episode about Jeffrey Epstein is not going to do enough justice to cover everything that he was involved in. So what I wanted to do was I just wanted to pick a couple components of it. The history of blackmail, sexual blackmail operations, and a little bit about who Ghislaine Maxwell's family is, and a little bit of information about what Jeffrey Epstein was doing with AI. There's more to this story. There's his involvement with Southern Air Transport, which is the CIA front group that is in charge of shuttling, that was in charge of shuttling large amounts of cocaine into the United States through that Iran-Contra affair. If you've seen the movie American Made with Tom Cruise, he plays a pilot named Barry Seal. That is a true story. Now, the movie isn't true. They embellished some things, and they definitely downplayed the role of the CIA in that. But Southern Air Transport is a CIA-owned airline that was flying cocaine in to the United States. And Jeffrey Epstein and his protege, Les Wexner, have literally their fingerprints all over that company. They had involvement in it. They were able to move that operation from Miami to Columbus, Ohio. And this is a topic that I'll get into in a future episode. Because like I said, you can't handle all of the Epstein in one episode. It's too big. And I made this comment when Epstein was arrested in New Jersey when he flew in the summer of 2019. I've said it then, I'll say it now, I'll say it in the future. The Epstein case has the ability to take down the United States government. It's that big. I know that's a big statement, but it is accurate in the sense that his ties to people in positions of power throughout the United States cannot be understated. Bill Clinton gets a lot of, you know, notoriety for his relationship. People said that Trump knows him. That is true as well. But it is way bigger than that. It's international in its reach. He was involved with media players in a big way. He was involved with Hollywood too. He had connections to some of the most powerful universities in the world. And his relationship with Wall Street and heads of banks is well known, not to mention, and I think one of the more devious components of this that I already mentioned is his relationship with Bill Gates. Because Bill Gates is an enemy of humanity, as was Jeffrey Epstein. And what those guys were working on together can only, you know, I can only imagine. But I will tell you, it probably leans less towards the child sex abuse and more towards the depopulation agenda and eugenics programs that Bill Gates is involved with and artificial intelligence. So this is something that is an evolving story with regards to his relationship with Gates, but we'll get into more of this. If you're interested in information on Jeffrey Epstein, go find Whitney Webb's work from Mint Press News that she put out in the summer, fall of 2019. It's a 4-part series. She should win the Pulitzer Prize for it. She won't because it's about Epstein, but she should. It's that good. She brought in, you know, the ties to Les Wexner and Wexner's ties to the mega group and his association with the, you know, other Jewish billionaires and how that played a role in this whole thing. And we're going to get into that. I'll get into that in another episode, but there's a lot of Jeffrey Epstein's out there. Unfortunately, he's just the brand name that we have right now. But don't for a second think that this was a limited event. You had Craig Spence who was running homosexual blackmail rings in Washington, D.C. in the 80s that would coincide with the Franklin scandal, the Franklin cover-up. You know, you have the D.C. madam that was running call girl operations in D.C. and then wound up dead after stating on the record days earlier, I am not suicidal, wound up killing herself. A lot of suicides going on when you're in this industry. But that's how power works. That's how Washington, D.C. runs. It runs on power, and power is acquired by taking it, by using leverage over people, by putting bad people in place that are compromised and compromisable in the future, and then getting them under your thumb and making them do what you want them to do in exchange for money or votes or weapons or cocaine or whatever. So Epstein's the tip of the iceberg, but we'll get into this in additional episodes. Share this. Get the word out there. This podcast is not going to grow by itself. It's going to require the help of everybody that's listening and everybody that likes it. So there's little buttons when you listen to these episodes. It says you can share it on Twitter, or you can share it on Facebook, or you can send it to friends. Please do that. I really do appreciate it. Thanks, everybody. Take care.